Hello, and welcome to Iris and to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, June 22nd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's look at the weather forecast first thing. Today and tomorrow continue to look like nice summer days. Plan on much lower humidity through the day, along with highs into the mid-upper 80s over much of the area. Look for more of the same tomorrow. By Friday morning, another chance of storms may occur in portions of eastern Iowa, though the better chance looks to be Friday night into Saturday. Given high humidity in the area and a potent low-pressure system nearby, any storm may feasibly turn strong to severe. Saturday night's strong cold front will bring in some much cooler air on Sunday and Monday. Let's look at the stories on the front page today. Council chooses Bertie in 5-2 vote of sound mind. Man charged in pig deaths pleads to bank fraud. And we'll begin reading the lead story, Grocer to Build Soon. City says all-in grocers to start construction in the next few weeks. The story was filed by Maria Cooper. Dateline Waterloo. A local grocery store, now 5 years in the making, came before City Council again on Monday to discuss a new subordination agreement. Developers of the All-In Grocers are finalizing financing this week for the downtown store, and construction is set to start soon after. Councilors approved the agreement 5-1, with Dave Boson dissenting. Councilor John Childs was absent. The city approved a subordinate clause in January, but this week's approval was changing the specific language on the agreement due to the pushed-back closing date on the financing, according to All-In Grocers lawyer Eric Johnson. Johnson said the grocery secured the site by mortgage to the city, but to get to construction required financing from lenders. He said the developers, quote, are always going to subordinate to that. The city has given $900,000 to $1.2 million for the project. The subordination agreement puts the city third in line to receive its grant money back if the developer doesn't finish construction. Residents like Forrest Delavu were upset about the subordination, saying the people of Waterloo are being overlooked. Quote, we have a lot of money invested in this, and it's not coming back because this agreement puts the city of Waterloo at the bottom of the list, Delavu said. Quote, everyone gets their money first, and the city last, and that's where the taxpayers have always been, last. Councillor Dave Boson also expressed disagreement, ultimately voting no on the resolution. He asked what had changed from earlier in the year. Johnson said the developers made multiple attempts at financing the project after some of the options didn't work out. Quote, in December, we thought there was government funding that was imminent, and it didn't happen. Then those funds were found from other lenders who agreed to put the money in this project, Johnson said. Quote, it just gets reconstituted, and the developers wish more than anybody that it would have closed a year ago because of where prices go, unquote. Boson noted that prices of materials are rising, saying there is a 30% increase in supplies. Johnson said the budget is updated with increases factored into it. Back in January, developer Rodney Anderson said development was delayed due to rising steel prices. In October 2020, Noel Anderson, Community Planning and Development Director, said financial paperwork and the supply shortage from COVID-19 contributed to the delayed start date. In May of 2021, Rodney Anderson said contractors finished installing the building's foundation during the winter, but construction wouldn't start until late summer of that year. He then projected the rest of the work would take about 7 months. The topic of concern for both residents and councilors is that the project is taking years to finish. Mayor Quentin Hart asked Noel Anderson if there are other projects that take 5 to 10 years to complete. Anderson said yes, although many projects are talked about in confidence, whereas the development of the grocery store has been talked about publicly since 2017. Both Noel Anderson and Johnson reassured councilors that closing will happen in the next week. Other residents, like Catherine Mahoney, celebrated the updated closing date. Quote, "All in grocery will be fantastic for our city," Mahoney said. "It is needed. It is long overdue. And as regards to the subordination agreement, Mr. Johnson tells us this is standard. This is just updating something that was already done," unquote. The proposed building at Highway 63 and Franklin Street is expected to include a grocery store, restaurant, laundromat, and community center. Next, Andy Malone gives us this story. Cedar Falls City Council confirms Bertie's public safety director appointment in a 5-2 vote. Dateline Cedar Falls. Craig Burt was confirmed as Cedar Falls public safety director on Monday. The city council approved his recommended appointment to the top position in a 5-2 vote. He beat out two other finalists and was recommended as the number one choice by Mayor Rob Green, City Administrator Rob Gaines, and a selection committee. Seven candidates initially applied for the job of leading the conjoined police and fire operation. Bertie has been with the department since 1991. Since March, he has served as interim public safety director following Jeff Olson's retirement. Quote, "I'm humbled and honored by the opportunity," Bertie said after the meeting. "There are many things we are going to keep on doing well," unquote. He'll be paid an annual salary of $157,508, Gaines told the Courier. His first day in the permanent role is Saturday. He's been interim director since former director Jeff Olson retired on March 11th. Before that, Bertie was police chief. Bertie noted that his department will continue to work on communication and, quote, "its role of informing the public," unquote. Quote, "Cedar Falls Public Safety will continue to make the best use of our citizens' tax dollars while providing effective and efficient fire and police services," he said in a news release. Quote, "We are proud to reduce our city's fire risk through an aggressive annual fire inspections program and work to prevent and reduce crime utilizing technology and enforcement efforts targeting areas with the greatest potential for violent crime," unquote. Councilors Dave Sires and Dustin Gainfield voted against his appointment. Sires initially refused to vote, according to City Attorney Kevin Rogers. That equates to a vote in the negative. Sires said Bertie has done a fine job for our city of Cedar Falls for many years and may have been the best candidate, but felt there should have been more council and public involvement in the hiring process for such a powerful position. Two councilors, Kelly Dunn and Simon Harding, served on the committee that interviewed the three finalists on May 25th. The public was given the opportunity to comment Monday night. No one stepped forward to speak. Ganfield also noted his appreciation for the job Bertie has done in Cedar Falls, but said he has concerns with filling the position because future discussions about the public safety officer model could result in changes. A majority of councilors have said they want an external review of the department, but discussions have been postponed until the annual goal-setting sessions in November. Any audit likely won't happen until next year. Quote, "I'm not convinced yet that this is a position we need to hire at this moment," Ganfield said. During the discussion, Councillor Gil Schultz backed Bertie as someone who has shown the commitment to Cedar Falls. Quote, "As far as not having an alignment or understanding with the PSO," which Sires questioned when noting he wanted somebody with true experience in the PSO system, so we could have the very best community that we could possibly have. Schultz argued Bertie grew up with it. He's been there for every step, unquote. Green reaffirmed his support for Bertie after the meeting. Quote, "He was the best candidate for the job. I have my full confidence in his abilities," he said. Quote, "He is well regarded within the local law enforcement community, as evidenced during the selection process for police chief in 2020. Green said in a memo to the council, quote, "In my interactions with him in the capacity as acting public safety director, He has amply shown executive-level thinking and demonstrated that he is well-prepared, capable, and eager to perform at the director level in the service to the people of Cedar Falls, unquote. After the meeting, Dunn, chair of Council's Administration Committee, noted Bertie had done a great job as police chief and in the interim director role. She noted he's practically grown up at the department, having served since 1991. Quote, he also helped out the Racial Equity Task Force, she said. He's an active citizen, and that's important as well, as someone who I think will be a great leader, unquote. A graduate with a criminology degree from the University of Northern Iowa, Bertie has held the titles of police officer, investigator, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, assisting director, assistant police chief, and police chief while serving Cedar Falls. Bertie and his wife raised their 5 children in Cedar Falls. The lone external finalist was Lynn, known as Al Fear Jr., a retired 25-year veteran of the Cedar Rapids Police Department and the founder and director of operations at the Guardian Training Services Institute, which, according to its website, is a group of individuals devoted to improving the lives and careers of emergency responders across the country. The other candidate was Acting Police Chief Mark Howard, formerly a captain with the department. Because of Olson's retirement, a number of public safety personnel were promoted in the interim. City leaders will meet sometime in the next few days to plan for the future, said Bertie. But a city spokesperson has said the department will go through a formal hearing process for the police chief. Our next story comes from Jeff Reinitz. Man charged in pig deaths pleads to bank fraud. And it begins with a photograph of a confinement building. Dateline Cedar Falls. A Cedar Falls man accused of allowing hundreds of pigs to starve to death in December has pleaded to fraud charges. Nolan Otto DeWall, 38, pleaded to one count of bank fraud in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids on June 7th. Sentencing will be at a later date. DeWall was a general manager of an agricultural cooperative and part owner of a trucking company, and in 2018, he allegedly embarked on check kiting scheme between the business's bank accounts to falsely inflate the value of the accounts in order to cover checks and delay their financial obligations, according to court records. He was indicted in March 2022, following lawsuits and a bankruptcy filing in the resulting aftermath. In addition to the trucking company and co-op, DeWall ran a farm located on South Butler Road in rural Cedar Falls. The DeWall farm included livestock, feeding, and row crops with 2 new hog confinement buildings with a total capacity of 2,500 pigs, financed by Farmers State Bank. The farm ran into problems with low commodity prices and high operating costs with the crops. A storm destroyed the cattle feeding building, and a hog producer didn't pay the full amount of their feeding contract, according to the bankruptcy filings. In addition, disease problems for sows meant the farm wasn't able to find enough hogs to fill its confinement buildings for feeding contracts, and Farmers State Bank filed for foreclosure, sparking the bankruptcy in July 2021. Meanwhile, former business associates of DeWall allege he misled GNB Bank of Grundy Center about the financial condition of the cooperative. Voorhees Grain Incorporated, in an effort to secure $8.5 million in financing for the operation, according to court action brought by Harold and Julie Sorensen, who personally guaranteed the promissory notes. DeWall allegedly came up with counterfeit grain receipts and overstated the value of soybeans held by Voorhees, the Sorensens allege. This included using soybeans to top off bins of corn to make it appear that the bins were filled exclusively with the more expensive soybeans, court records allege. This mixture resulted in further damage from spoilage, according to court record. GNB ultimately filed a fraud claim with its insurance carrier, leaving the Sorensens with a $2 million debt to the bank, court records state. DeWall is challenging the Sorensens' allegation. In court records, his attorney denied DeWall prepared false grain receipts or presented false information. As to allegations of mixing the grains, an operator error in the elevator system inadvertently dropped soybeans on top of his corn, his attorney said in court records. While the bankruptcy began to brew, the farm entered an agreement in December 2021 to take on 2,500 young pigs for another person to get them up to sale weight of 280 pounds. The owner paid to have 15 tons of feed delivered to the farm, and the services of a swine consultant were provided. When the consultant called to check on the pigs on December 30th, after only 8 days, DeWall first said he was at a funeral and then called back to say there was a problem and some of the livestock had suffocated, according to court records. In the South confinement building, the consultant found a few hundred pigs had died and didn't have access to water, records state. The temperature in the building was in the 50s, which was well below the 80 to 85 degrees needed for the pigs to thrive. Most, if not all, of the feeders were empty, and the water bowls weren't even hooked up to the water system, court records state. Court records allege the conditions in the northern building were worse, with about 600 dead pigs and colder inside temperatures. Again, some water bowls weren't hooked up and feeders were empty. Pigs were in piles along the heaters as if they were trying to get any warmth possible. Dead pigs were found inside feeders where they apparently went to escape the cold concrete floors. Those that were alive were licking the walls and floors trying to find nourishment, records state. Photos taken by a veterinarian who visited the scene show two groups of pigs separated by a metal fence. On one side, the water bowl wasn't hooked up, and the pigs were dead. The other side had a bowl hooked up to the water system, and the pigs were alive. The surviving pigs were removed from the property, and during the trip, 50 perished. Another 25 died after being watered. In all, some 800 pigs died, according to court records. Lab tests at the Iowa State University Diagnostic Lab in Ames found no signs of disease, but discovered malnourishment and dehydration. In January 2022, Blackhawk County Sheriff's deputies arrested DeWall for animal neglect, and his case is tentatively set for trial in August. Next, we have the central story on the front page, and it's offered by Melody Parker, titled Of Sound Mind, and it begins with a photograph of Colette Ellison, a certified sound therapist, and she's playing a handheld drum and singing as she sits among other instruments she used to create a bath, a therapeutic practice using the healing qualities of sound and vibration. Dateline Cedar Falls. Colette Ellison sits cross-legged on a beautiful rug surrounded by quartz crystal and metal Tibetan singing bowls in various diameters. With a small wooden striker in each hand, she lightly touches the rims and sides of the bowls in fluid, continuous motions to create crystal-clear, bell-like, and perfectly pitched tones. Ellison then turns to face a large gong on a wooden stand. She picks up a felt-headed mallet and strikes the large bronze plate. A deep, sonorous sound reverberates in the air, resonating throughout one's body, right down to the toes. Moments later, she is pounding a handheld drum in a heartbeat rhythm and softly singing. Quote, every living thing vibrates. All matter and everything in nature vibrates. Our bodies respond to the vibrations that sounds make, and those vibrations have healing properties. Stress, work, just our daily lives can cause our own natural resonance to get off kilter. Sound therapy brings it back into balance, explains Ellison, a certified sound therapist. Using sound to impact the human body in a positive way is an ancient practice, but modern science has shown that sound has a definitive impact on our brains and bodies. Ellison, owner of Heart Wide Open, also uses tuning forks, chimes, and other instruments to perform sound baths or healing and meditative group and individual sessions. She has presented workshops and sessions at Hartman Reserve Nature Center, Hearst Center for the Arts, Three Pines Farm, New Dawn Yoga, all in Cedar Falls, as well as Holistic Hippie Wellness Center in Jessup, and numerous other locations throughout the Cedar Valley. Quote, doors keep opening for me, and it's amazing. People are interested in finding ways to regain calm, to feel better, to bring harmony to their lives, and be more in balance, she says. Ellison began delving into sound therapy in 2015 after experiencing a session herself. Quote, I was overcome by a sense of joy and love. Those of us in that room barely knew each other, but you could feel it, and it was so beautiful, she recalls. It was very healing for me. I was sleeping better. I felt calm, like everything was in balance. I had to learn more, unquote. After studying courses offered through the British Academy of Sound Therapy and attending in-person training offered in Cedar Rapids, Ellison became a certified sound therapist in 2019. In 2020, she achieved Level 2, which adds to her credentials for vocal harmonics, including using her voice and singing as part of her therapies. Sound can be soothing and relaxing, or energizing depending on the tones and vibrations Ellison achieves with her instruments and her voice. There is even sonic messaging, using a tuning fork to create vibrations to aid specific painful areas of the body, such as arthritic knees or ankles. Quote, even I was a little skeptical at first, but I've seen and experienced what sound therapy can do, how it can help people. Sound therapy lifts the mood, slows the heart, lowers blood pressure, reduces stress, improves your mood, improves memory, encourages sleep, and connects us to a higher reality. I've always been interested in holistic, organic, and alternative methods of healing, and sound therapy brings harmony to people, helping them find peace and calm, Ellison explains. Quote, at its core, it opens the mind and body to healing. Negative energy blocks your natural flow of chi, your life force, and certain sound therapies and meditations can help release those negative feelings and encourage healing. Ellison, a Reiki master, sometimes combines sound therapy with Reiki, a healing technique that guides energy through the body to promote healing and reduce stress. She also is New Goods Coordinator at Goodwill Industries of Northeast Iowa, a former adjunct instructor at the University of Northern Iowa, and studied interior design and gerontology, long-term care administration at UNI. Ellison believes she has found herself through sound therapy. Quote, I love helping people heal. I feel like this is my journey on earth, she said. I feel like I'm a healing force for good, unquote. We turn the page now to the Cedar Valley section, and our first story was written by Maria Cooper. Waterloo okays city pay raises. Most non-bargaining workers get a 2% hike. Dateline Waterloo. Most non-bargaining city employees are receiving a salary increase, some more than others. The City Council Monday approved a resolution that will give a majority of non-bargaining employees a 2% increase. Certain positions at the Waterloo Police Department and Waterloo Fire Rescue will receive higher raises. Assistant Chief of Police Joel Liebold and Fire Chief Pat Trevelore are each getting a 12.1% raise. Police captains will receive a 10.3% salary boost, and battalion chiefs will receive a 6% increase. In addition, Mayor Quentin Hart confirmed Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald will receive a 2% salary increase. Human Resources Director Lance Dunn said the increases will cost around $476,611, with $379,496 coming from the general fund. The money to fund raises for the Assistant Chief of Police and Fire Chief was approved by the Council for the 2022-23 budget. Increases for police captains and battalion chiefs were not. One city employee receiving the 2% increase said she felt overlooked. Leanne Evan, the deputy city clerk, said there was no voice or representation for non-bargaining employees in the process. Evan said the city clerk's office originally budgeted a 3% increase for staff as non-bargaining employees. She also noted that this is less than what was negotiated for union employees. Quote, I would like the council to look at me as valued as employees who are going to make 12, 10, and 6% increases, Evan said. Quote, I hope you value what we do as employees. I want to know that I'm valued as an employee, unquote. She also noted the council approved a resolution to study non-bargaining raises and structures, saying the city was experiencing difficulty attracting candidates. Bozen agreed the non-bargaining employees have fallen below what union contracts suggest and said those employees need representation. Quote, I'm really pleased this council voted to pass the resolution for the non-bargaining study, Bozen said. It may shock us when it comes back, and if it does, we need to put together a plan to make right so we can work with non-bargaining employees and show that we value them, unquote. Bozen, the only councillor to discuss the agenda item, said he would support the resolution after much thought because contracts keep changing for non-bargaining staff and those at the fire and police departments. He said, for example, some lieutenants are making as much as a captain. Quote, we have compressed so much that in order to attract qualified people to work in these positions, we need to do something to adjust the pay, unquote. We continue to sign contracts that bring everyone else up, but these people stay down, unquote. The council passed the resolution 6-0 with John Childs absent. Our next story was written by Jeff Reinitz. Former Cedar Falls firefighter takes city to court over public safety switch. And it begins with a photograph of community members holding up signs that say, I say no to PSOs. Dateline Cedar Falls. The lone remaining member of the Cedar Falls Firefighters Union is taking the city to court, alleging city officials violated his rights when they adopted the public safety officer model in 2020. In a suit filed Monday in a U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids, Scott Dix alleges the city violated his First Amendment right to free speech because he was let go after voicing criticisms of the model, which uses cross-trained police officers and firefighters. The suit also alleges he was targeted for taking part in union activities. Dix is asking the court to rescind his discharge from the city and award damages for compensation and emotional distress, as well as punitive damages. The suit names as defendants former Public Safety Director Jeff Olson, City Administrator Ron Gaines, and City Council members Susan DeBurr, Frank Dara, Mark Miller, Daryl Cruz, and Nick Tabor. Dix, a 25-year firefighting veteran, and other fire union officials were vocally critical of the city's decision to adopt the cross-training model because of safety concerns. The city had been gradually adopting portions of the model for years. Then the firefighter job classification was eliminated weeks after a 5-2 city council vote to fully implement the public safety model in February of 2020. The remaining firefighters were placed on administrative leave. The city resisted a union request for bargaining following the council vote. One firefighter joined the public safety officer program, and the rest accepted a severance package, with the exception of Dix, who was laid off in June of 2020. Police officers who weren't cross-trained and police and fire supervisors who weren't cross-trained were allowed to remain, according to court records. The suit comes after a state court judge in 2021 ordered the city to rewrite job qualifications for public safety supervisors following a challenge by Dix and the International Association of Firefighters Local 1366, and after an administrative judge finding that the city officials had retaliated against the union in the public safety switch. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Wednesday, June 22nd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Cedar Falls. Bradley Dean Branch was born July 22, 1959, in Cedar Falls, Iowa, to Nelson A. Branch and Jean Nay Burroughs Branch. Both preceded him in death in 1990 and 2019, respectively. He passed away June 14, 2022, in Big Lake, Minnesota. Bran was an accomplished Boy Scout and achieved the God and Country badge and rank of Eagle Scout. He had a passion for flying and earned his pilot's license before he was 18, even after health reasons prohibited him from actually piloting a plane. He treated himself on his birthdays to a ride in a small plane around sites near his home in Minneapolis. After graduating from Cedar Falls High School, Brad attended the University of Northern Iowa, where he was a member of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity. He graduated with a BS in industry and technology, which he put to use working in construction, welding, carpentry, and even the oil fields in Canada. He was employed at Augsburg University in Minnesota when he passed away. He was married to Denise Johnson in 1989, and they were later divorced. He leaves behind their three children, Danielle, spouse Andrew Lewis of Arizona, Blake, spouse Adriana Branch, and their daughter Isabella of Minnesota, and Brittany Branch of Minnesota. Interment at Greenwood Cemetery will begin at 11:30 on Monday, June 27, 2022. Visitation will be at noon at the First Presbyterian Church in Cedar Falls. A celebration of life will begin at 1 p.m. with refreshments and conversations afterwards. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Ionia. Marvin Ackerson, 80, of Ionia, passed away peacefully at his daughter's home in Lamont, Iowa, on Monday, June 20th, 2022. A funeral service for Marvin will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Friday, June 24th, 2022, at Hauser Weishauer Funeral Home in Charles City, with Pastor Dan Larson officiating. Burial will follow at Howard Cemetery in Elma. Visitation will be at the funeral home on Friday from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock a.m. prior to the funeral service. Marvin K. Ackerson, the son of Wilbert and Ruth, maiden name Moore Ackerson, was born on March 31, 1942, in Charles City. He graduated from Charles City High School in 1960 and attended Mason City Junior College. Marvin was united in marriage to Laura Lee DeVries on April 4, 1964. To this union, the couple was blessed with three children, Michelle, Brett, and Stacy. Marvin worked at White Farm for 31 years. Marvin loved horses and was a member of Chuckwagon Racers of Iowa and Minnesota for over 20 years. He enjoyed coon hunting and loved watching all types of sports. Hauser Weishauer Funeral Home, phone number, area code 641-228-2323, 1205 South Main Street in Charles City, Iowa, 50616, is in charge of local arrangements. Online condolences may be left on the tribute wall for the family at www.hauserfh.com. Center Point. Jerry Mac Jordan, 82, of Center Point, Iowa, passed away on Monday, June 20th, 2022, at his home. A memorial service will be at 2 o'clock p.m. Friday, June 24th, 2022, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Center Point. Jerry was born on March 15, 1940, in Waverly, Iowa, the son of Claude and Mary Lucille McGregor Jordan. After high school, Jerry honorably served his country in the United States Navy during Vietnam. On September 8, 1961, he was united in marriage to Kathleen Hirsch at St. John's Lutheran Church in Nashua. Jerry was a sheet metal worker for Sheet Metal Workers Local No. 2. He was a dog and horse trainer that also owned and operated Kojak Kennels. Jerry was a member of the German Shorthair Pointer Club of Eastern Iowa. Jerry was quite a character that loved a good joke. He will be missed by those who knew and loved him. Please share a memory of Jerry at www.murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. Here, the Courier lists 3 death notices. Donna R. Clausen, 78, of Iowa Falls, died Monday, June 20, 2022, at Scenic Manor. Arrangements are with Council Woodley Funeral Home of Iowa Falls. Robert, known as Bob Nevins, 82, of Parkersburg, died Monday, June 20th, 2022, at his home in Parkersburg. Arrangements are with Redmond Funeral and Cremation Services in Parkersburg. Margaret Mary Sprague, 73, of Elk Run Heights, died Sunday, June 19th, 2022, at her home. Arrangements are with Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories. We turn now to more local news from the Courier. Journalist Jeff Reinitz filed this story. Man pleads not guilty to neglect in the death of 3,000 feeder hogs. Randalia. A Randalia farmer has pleaded not guilty to charges that 3,000 hogs died of neglect on his property. Derek David Smith, 41, waived an in-court arraignment and filed a written not guilty plea to 1 count of livestock neglect on Monday. He also waived his speedy trial rights, and trial was tentatively set for August in Fayette County District Court in West Union. The charge is a serious misdemeanor, punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a $2,560 fine. Smith had been hired by Valley Farms, LLC, to care for hogs, and on June 2nd, authorities found more than 3,000 feeder hogs dead at his confinement operation on 170th Street, according to court records. The hogs died of a lack of feed, court records state, and another 200 hogs had to be put down because of health reasons. Our next story comes from the Gazette, and journalist Tom Barton filed this one. Will Iowa caucuses remain first in the nation? Iowa Democrats make their pitch Thursday to the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee as to why they should remain an early voting state in the nation's presidential nominating process. State party officials will present proposed changes to its caucuses that modernizes and streamlines the process. The goal? Secure a renewed place at the front of their party's presidential nominating calendar. The Republican National Committee in April voted unanimously to keep Iowa at the front of the line in the GOP's president selection process. Iowa is among 16 states and Puerto Rico vying to be included in the Democrats' early presidential nominating window ahead of Super Tuesday in early March 2024. The DNC Rules Committee voted in April to reopen the presidential nominating window, forcing all interested states, including the current early nominating states of Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, to apply for a spot. The move came after the current lineup of early nominating states came under increasing fire following a chaotic 2020 caucus night for the Iowa Democrats, when a smartphone app meant to make reporting results easier failed. As a result, the official Democratic caucus results were not reported for several weeks. Critics have slammed Iowa's first-in-the-nation status over the state's lack of diversity and electoral competitiveness. And national Democrats complain the caucuses are too opaque and inaccessible, requiring in-person attendance that makes it difficult to participate for Iowans who work late shifts, lack access to child care or transportation, or have health or mobility problems. Our next story comes to us from the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Journalist Aaron Murphy filed it. Open enrollment deadline eliminated with new law signed by governor. Dateline Des Moines. Students can apply to open enroll to other public school district at any point in the year, under a new law approved Tuesday by our governor, Kim Reynolds. It was among three bills Reynolds signed into law Thursday, completing her work on all legislation that was passed this year by state lawmakers. The elimination of the previous March 1st deadline for an open enrollment request was one of the last pieces of legislation approved during the session, after it became apparent that majority Republicans did not have enough votes to pass Reynolds's so-called school choice bill, which included a program that would have diverted state funding for public schools to private school tuition assistance. The March 1st deadline for open enrollment requests was put in place so school districts could plan for how many students they will have the following school year. And the previous state law included exemptions to the deadline for students who faced issues like bullying. Jack Whitfer, the Republican Senate Majority Leader from Ankeny, said recently on Iowa PBS Iowa Press show that Republicans felt removing the deadline was an important aspect of their school choice agenda. Whitfer cited recent policies codified by the Lindmar School District to protect transgender students from discrimination. Some parents upset by the policies, which had been in place in practice in the district for years, requested and were granted a private meeting with Reynolds and U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, both Republicans. Quote, really anything the parents find that they don't like about that school could be a reason for an open enrollment request, Whitfer said on Iowa Press. Obviously, one of the high-profile ones is what was going on in Marion when they rolled out a transgender policy shortly after that March 1st deadline. Parents are saying, quote, what is our alternative? And we don't think there is one. So we wanted to open that up. But that's just one reason. It could be anything. School officials and Democrats who opposed the proposal warned that it will make it more difficult for districts to plan for the following school year. The measure was included in the legislature's standings bill, which is a catch-all budget and policy bill that is often one of the last to be approved during a legislative session. This year's standings bill, House File 2589, also contained a new ban on private funding for local elections operations. That provision was created in response to the reported $419 million in grants funded by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg that were designed to help election officials operate the 2020 elections during the COVID-19 pandemic. Scott County, $286,870, and Blackhawk County, $267,500, received grants in 2020, according to court documents produced after a group sued the counties unsuccessfully over the grants. Quote, I do not believe that there should be conservative, wealthy people doing that, and I do not believe there should be liberal, wealthy people doing that, Iowa Representative Bobby Kaufman, a Republican from Wilton, and chairman of the Iowa House's State Government Committee, said during the session, quote, I'm not comfortable, and I have yet to encounter anybody that can give me a reasonable counter-debate on why private dollars with, in my opinion, special political interests in mind, should be able to contribute directly to election officials conducting their business, unquote. Other bills include small artisanal butchers that produce custom meats will get some help from the state in legislation signed into law by Governor Reynolds. The new law is the result of recommendations made by a state task force that was convened last year to study ways the state could help small butchers. Small butchers in Iowa have said they are dealing with increased demand by customers seeking artisanal and custom meats, often from farm-to-table producers, and are beset with supply chain issues caused by disruption in commercial meat processing due to the coronavirus pandemic. Under the new law, the state will create a one-year artisanal butchery certificate program for community colleges to offer. The state education department is instructed to compile resources for meat processing plants that include information on existing butchery grant program apprenticeships and internships and worker training and development. The legislation, House File 2470, was approved unanimously by state lawmakers. Quote, by signing the bill, we are building on years of efforts to support our small meat processors in Iowa. This bill is a win for Iowa's livestock producers, our agriculture industry, and our entire state, Reynolds said in a statement to the Bureau. Quote, it strengthens the partnership between our community colleges and departments of education, workforce development, and agriculture to provide much-needed support to Iowa's local meat lockers and butchery programs, unquote. Reynolds also signed into law Tuesday House File 2581, which contains myriad programs under the State Agriculture Department. Let's take a look at the sports page now. UNI lands linebacker from Lincoln, filed by Ethan Petrick, Dateline Cedar Falls. As he made the return trip from Cedar Falls to Lincoln, Nebraska, Lincoln's Southwest linebacker, Brogan Ling, announced his commitment to the Northern Iowa football program. According to Ling, shortly after he arrived on campus in Cedar Falls, he knew he wanted to become a Panther. Quote, I feel like right away when I got there, it felt like home, Ling said. The community, I could tell that they backed up the college and put a lot into the college. It is a really great fan base. It seems like a great community to live in, unquote. Ling doubled down on the fit at UNI, stating that the relative proximity to his hometown did not play a role in choosing the Panthers. Quote, it was not really a factor, Ling said. 4.5 hours is still pretty close to home. That is just where fit me the best. The 6'3", 200-pound Ling said he knew he wanted to play football at the next level from an early age. Quote, ever since I was a kid, Ling said, right when the ball got in my hands, I knew I wanted to keep pursuing the path to play in college, unquote. Without any relatives who have participated in college athletics, Ling says he takes pride in becoming the first member of his family to make it to that next level. Quote, I think it will be nice, Ling said. My parents wanted to push me to be my best, as well as my siblings, my grandparents, and honestly, everyone in my family. I think it will be pretty cool to be the first person in my family to play collegiate sports, unquote. A recent uptick in Division I football talent in the Lincoln area allowed Ling to improve his game against other high-quality players. Quote, it made for way better competition, Ling said. Growing up against them, you can base your skill sets off of them. You can work off of them and see where you need to get better, unquote. Demonstrated by his 45 tackles, 4 sacks, 1 interception, and forced 1 fumble as a junior at Lincoln Southwest High School, Ling said the biggest thing he brings to UNI is his football IQ and his ability to help make his teammates better. Quote, I feel like my smarts, my instincts for reading keys, as well as speed, Ling said. Quote, outside linebacker for us is a big position. You have to keep outside, contain. I made sure to keep the running back in all the time. It helped our defense a ton, not letting the running backs get into the outside, unquote. He also added that he took care of covering opposing tight ends in addition to his containment responsibilities. With 8 linebackers currently on the roster, including 2 seniors, Ling joins a position group with a chance to earn playing time early. Now in prep baseball, we have a story filed by Ethan Petrick, and it's titled Rasty Powers Tigers, and begins with a photograph of Cedar Falls' Caleb Rasty, and he's greeted at home after hitting a grand slam in the 4th inning Monday against East at East in a Metro baseball game. Shortstop drives in 9 as Cedar Falls downs East 20-6. Dateline Waterloo. Cedar Falls shortstop Caleb Rasty blasted his first 2 home runs of the season, including a grand slam, as the Tigers, 18-6, beat Metro rival Waterloo East 20-6 on Monday. Raisty hit a two-run shot in the first, and his grand slam in the fourth helped the Tigers up their lead to 16-5. As for the slam, the senior said that although it was not his intention, he knew the moment the ball left his bat that it was going over the wall. Quote, "I knew that one was gone," Rusty said. "It was crushed just like the first one. I was not looking to hit a home run. I was just looking to get some guys into scoring position, get some more RBIs," unquote. Raisty finished 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored, a double, the 2 home runs, and 9 RBIs. Cedar Falls carried momentum into the tilt as winners of 3 straight games. Meanwhile, East, 9-19, came into Monday's contest after breaking a 4-game losing streak in its last time out against the Union of LaPorte City Saturday. Cedar Falls head coach Brett Williams said his team, after a tough start to the last week, focused on their ability to respond and battle during their upstart winning streak. Quote, "One of those things we were focused on is, are we going to battle?" Williams said. Quote, "We have a lot of things on the table we are trying to get. We feel like we can host a playoff game," unquote. The Tigers turned their momentum into a big first inning as senior first baseman Ben Phillips hit a home run on the first pitch of the game. According to Williams, the leadoff home run was Phillips's 4th such hit of the season, which spawned a nickname for the senior. Quote, "Each of them has been a leadoff," Williams said. "I call him Ben Philly Henderson. He does not even know who Ricky Henderson is, but one of those deals where it has been awesome. He is just a good hitter," unquote. 2 at-bats later, Raisty hit a 2-run home run to put the Tigers in front 3-0 in the top of the first. Trailing 4-0, the Trojans managed to put up 5 runs on 5 hits, including doubles from seniors Caleb Spooner and Brock Kewitt and sophomore Damaris Henderson to take the lead after 1 inning. Waterloo East head coach Eric Jesse described the team's response as awesome to see following the game. Quote, "You take one on the chin right away in the top half," Jesse said. "We do not have guys who quit, guys who fold. These guys are going to compete. We answered and we took the lead," unquote. Despite the Trojans' big inning, the Tigers continued to apply the pressure. Cedar Falls added 4 runs in the second on 3 walks, 4 instances of a hit by pitch, a sack fly from sophomore Colin Conrad, and a ground out by Raisty. Leading 8-5, Cedar Falls added 3 more runs in the third and 5 runs in the fourth, including the slam by Raisty to take a 16-5 lead after 4.5 innings. After allowing 1 run in the bottom of the fifth, the Tigers scored 4 runs before retiring the Trojans in order to seal the 20-6 win in 5 innings. Cy Anderson added a 3-for-4 night and drove in 4 for the Tigers. For Waterloo East, sophomore catcher Damaris Henderson put together a strong performance of his own at the plate, going 2-for-3, collecting 2 doubles. Quote, "It feels good knowing that I can have my team's back," Henderson said. "I know for sure I am one of the best hitters around this area, and it's going to be that way for the next 2 years," unquote. Jesse seconded Henderson's comments and added that the sophomore's experience serves as an added bonus for the Trojans. Quote, "Like he said, he is, for a fact, our most talented hitter in the box," Jesse said. "One of the most talented in the area. He can hit it to all fields. This year, he has really stepped up his leadership game," unquote. Jesse added that following a potentially season-ending injury to ace Justin Thomas, he hopes to continue to see young guys step up. Ethan Petrick also wrote this next story we're going to read. Bucks walk off loggers with big 9th inning. Dateline Waterloo. The Waterloo Bucks picked up their 5th win of the season, beating the La Crosse Loggers 9-8 in comeback fashion Monday in Northwoods League action at Riverfront Stadium. The contest started as a back-and-forth affair, which saw neither team give an inch early in the game. Trailing 2-0 in the bottom of the second, the Bucks tied the game on a fielder's choice and a Liam Critchett RBI double. The Loggers responded two innings later with two runs to take a 4-2 lead on a two-run home run by Connor Walsh. Despite the continuously shifting momentum, the Bucks managed to score three runs in the bottom of the seventh. Ohio University junior Colin Kasperbauer drove in two runs with a single to center field and would later come around to score to make it 5-4. LaCrosse managed a three-run inning in the top of the eighth to regain the lead for the third time in the game. Leading 7-5, LaCrosse added one additional insurance run in the top of the ninth to take a commanding three-run 8-5 lead. With one out and two on, University of Hawaii's freshman Ty Walton singled to load the bases. After Kyle Huxtorf scored via the third hit-by-pitch of the inning, Ryan Gordino scored via walk to draw the Bucks within one run. Iowa Central Community College sophomore Jalen Martinez hit an RBI single to right field to score two and walk off the Loggers 9-8. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, June 22nd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.